The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
I was thinking the other day how we can get really sophisticated in spirituality and or sometimes gimmicky or, make spirituality be something interesting. And in Buddhism, especially in early Buddhism, sometimes there's just these kind of very grounded, kind of not very exotic. I remember when I was a young man, I used to love Hinduism. I went to India when I was 20. Actually, I turned 21 there. And Krishna is just full of jewels and the singing of Hinduism and the flowers and the colors. And I found Buddhism and I thought, this is the most boring religion I've ever come across. Ajahn Sumedho spoke at a university I was in. This is when I was a junior in England. And I thought, these guys are really boring. And now that I'm not 20 years old anymore, it's something that has really stuck and serves me on my daily existence is this presentation of the tripod, where you have sila, samadhi, and panya. And if you've heard it 1,000 times, that's okay. The choir needs practice. So I'm preaching to the choir. And sila, the word, it means conduct. So you could have the sila of an elephant or the sila of a person. And then it later meant integrity. In Victorian English translations, virtue. We don't really talk about being virtuous anymore. And I've been thinking of the five precepts as this privilege as well. Like, when I was a kid, there was a war in El Salvador. And there are people who had to decide whether they were going to kill someone to protect other people. And today, and all of my life, I've never had to be in a situation where I have to question whether I'm going to kill someone, murder someone. And to really take that in, Ajahn Sumedho used to talk to us when we were monks, young monks, because we used to get depressed or bored or, horny or distracted. And he was like, are you keeping the precepts? That's all you have to do. And in Buddhist cosmology, if you keep the precepts, you are in the human realm. In my BIPOC group, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color group, I have done a year-long reflection on the first discourse of the Buddha, which is the quintessential teaching and something that is really close to my heart. And we're finishing with cosmology. So I already gave the talk on the hell realms, the animal realms, the hungry ghosts, and the angels and the gods. It's kind of fun. And to be in the human realm, you keep the five precepts. Because every cosmology level is paired up to a psychological or physical state. So the animal realm is the realm of fear and sexuality and greed. Because if you're in the forest, you've got to make a baby before someone eats you, right? And the hungry ghosts. And the angels who are interested in music, or the gods that are interested in creating, and there's angels that are protective. But, being human is very non-glamorous. You follow the five precepts. And so if you have the privilege of not stealing, my mom, when I was a little kid in El Salvador, went to visit my aunt in Edina. And I would look at these pictures and she had written Edina. I'm like, where is this Edina in Minnesota? And she used to say, the kids will leave their tricycles outside and nobody steals them. And I was like, what? How is that possible? How can someone just leave toys in the front yard and not get stolen? Well, if you have all your needs met, it's not so tempting. So to take that blessing, you know, that if you don't get the mind of a thief, just how it's described in Pali, that's a great blessing. And communication is so hard nowadays. You know, what is the intention of that text, of that email, of Zoom? And if you are vigilant, or at least have the intention to say the right thing to the right person, in the right place, at the right time, like that kind of stuff, it's hard to know the intention. And when we don't follow it, how do we do that? I don't know if you've had this experience, many people have, where something gets said and you can apologize 1,000 times and you can never take it back, right? So what is right communication in this world of ours with Instagram and Facebook and our sexual energy? Is there shame? Is there greed? But you know, if we haven't abused someone in a sexual way or transgressed, all of those things, all of those precepts, not as some commandment, but as guidelines. And when I look at my life now, where I don't have major regrets of evil things, you know, and there's no evil thing. People make mistakes. And we have a justice system in this world, in this country specifically, where people get judged by their biggest mistakes and they get put in boxes. And so this leg of the tripod is not about being saintly, but, you know, being grounded. And if we have those privileges where the precepts come easy, then gives a space for the other two, which are wisdom and samadhi. And mindfulness and meditation. You know, here when I'm in California, when I moved from Minnesota to California, I could not believe the materialism in some of the meditation communities. My favorite one was this ad and a shop to learn to meditate. And he had 9 asterisks of all the things that will happen. Your anxiety will be gone. You will sleep better. You will relax. Like, it had all these things. And that may be true, but to start off meditation practice by thinking of all the things you will get, I don't think it's sustainable. Because meditation can be such hard work. And, you know, as I've, now that I've over 30 years of meditating and I see the valleys and the things of, you know, of my life where sometimes I was, you know, really rigid about keeping a certain amount of minutes at it. And there's something really beautiful about having a ritual that you do it at the same time. But as a competitive 20-something, sometimes I would be like, oh, I'm going to do this. And I actually wanted to get enlightened. I thought that this was a thing. Like, what gets enlightened? Your personality? Like, it's just, as Ajahn Sumedho says, it's just the Buddha knowing the Dhamma. That is the definition of enlightenment, this present moment. And the reason why I look at the body and the moon and the earth as a clock is because when you really fully surrender to the present moment, it's the simplicity. And in this society that we live in, something that is our birthright has become incredibly rare. And it's something now that people will get into that materialistic thing. Oh, I want to feel the present moment. I want to have unity consciousness. I want to have God consciousness. I want to have, you know, da 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 da. You should see the places where they sell marijuana products in my neighborhood. They look like luxury galleries, you know, where people want to get out of their daily experience. And this leg of the tripod of bhavana, of cultivation of the mind, it's not just sitting on the cushion. The reason why you want to be mindful the rest of the day is so that when you sit in the cushion, your bridge doesn't have to be that long, you know? So I always used to take the bus to work. Now I drive, and sometimes I'm just like, okay, no radio. I don't need to know what the Biden administration is doing or what NPR has to say. But every stop sign will be my, there's a lot of stop signs. My work is 3.5 miles from where I am, and it takes me 20 minutes, 25 minutes in the city. And the driving at the moment is my practice. And when I was taking the train to Oakland every day, all the stressed out office people coming from Oakland to downtown San Francisco would be my mindfulness training, where I would look at their faces and just wish them safety and wish them basically sending a little bit of love. And mindfulness as an invitation, a listening. You know, after all of these years, I'm convinced that you just can't be mindful and order. It's not like you call Grubhub or a service. It's like, bring me some mindfulness. It doesn't work like that. And so we can do all of these techniques. And I've been counting my steps a lot recently, which it's new, you know, as I go through the years, different things come, you know, that there was a time and when I talk at Common Ground, whatever's happening in my life, that's what I talk about. Where I was doing this mudra meditation where my hands would just do these things spontaneously to move the energy out of my body. I haven't done mudras in a couple of years. And I say this to you so that you discover your meditation and that your meditation discovers you. And maybe you've been meditating for 20 years, and that's beautiful. And so continue that. And as you listen, things get revealed. When I went to Catholic school as a kid, they used to say, oh, God spoke to Moses. I'm like, how did he speak? Like, it's not telephone. How does God speak to anybody? But now I get it. And to relax into well-being. You know, so I look at my day today. I met a friend. And then I watch TV for like 2 hours. I just got absorbed into just being in bed, watching TV. I was going to read the paper, and I could have done all sorts of useful things. So I don't have to be like, I have to be mindful. And this play of like, what is it that is needed? You know, I'm working with teenagers who are under a lot of stress, who are feeling anxiety. Us teachers are tired. So watching TV is perfect. But when you read some of the scriptures, when you read Ajahn Chah or people that went to Thailand, you know, Ajahn Chah was teaching young farmers. And so he was really strict. Say, okay, you have to wake up at 3 a.m. You have to do this, you have to do this. And that teaching doesn't translate in this context. And I don't do the East-West translation. It actually annoys me, because what is the Southern world? You know, to divide spiritual wisdom into East and West is erasing the experience of Aboriginal people, of Native people, of Sub-Saharan African people. And all of this wisdom has existed in every tradition. Enlightenment was not invented by India. And it is our birthright to know the mind. It's the mind is peaceful. And with all the things going at my work, you know, like I have these two boys with ADHD that drive me crazy in my classroom sometimes. And that's life. And the more centered I am, I've started doing M&Ms in my class before every class. Okay, it's time for M&M. It's a mindfulness moment. And sometimes I'm, okay, guys, take your toes, write your full name with your toes in the air. And that was our mindfulness moment. And half of them don't do it, but I do it. And so every hour I'm doing an M&M in my world. And that's a new practice. And that's, what can you do? You know, how can you become curious about how to bring mindfulness here and there? And I've been so fascinated by the interweaving of these three aspects, sila, samadhi, and panya. And if you are wise and you have mindfulness, that's going to help your sila. You will get to a point where you're communicating. There's, you know, I went to a training with these nuns. I'm on the board with bhikkhunis, Ayananda Bodhi, who has been to Minneapolis, I think. And we're just talking about what is nonviolent communication. And we read the book. And then wisdom, the third leg of this tripod, which is the more difficult, you know, because you'll read a scripture and it says wisdom is knowing the Four Noble Truths. And that can be easy in the head, right? So you have the Ayurvedic medicine framework. There is a disease, and there's a cause for this disease, and you have a prognosis, and you have your treatment. So that framework is being used to present the human condition. And that the first noble truth is that everything that we come in contact with just happens to be impermanent and will not give you lasting pleasure. So as I love really good chocolate. Really good chocolate. Like, I think Hershey's takes like wax. I've become a chocolate snob. How much chocolate can I possibly eat before it becomes dukkha? For anything. You know, people that are wealthy enough to be on vacation the entire time. I remember touring Europe and it's like, oh, another church. Everything in our experience will have this thing of, it's not who we are, will not give us 100% pleasure, and it is impermanent. That's just the way it is. That's the first noble truth. And then the cause of this suffering that we have out of this, because we have existence. That's it. There is dukkha. Like, fact. I don't like the translation, life is suffering. I don't think that's a nice translation. It's more like dukkha's around, dukkha's here, dukkha's experienced. And the cause is not wanting the present moment to be what it is. I want a better relationship. I want the roof not to be leaking. I don't want climate change. And becoming idealistic can be problematic because perhaps you will never experience contentment. And contentment is, in my mind, a super high spiritual achievement. It is not a passive thing. It's seeing what you have, and that's it. You're resting. This is what I have. Right now, I am not demanding that my husband be someone who he is not. I am not demanding that I be in a different planet where the extinction is not happening. Much rather be in a planet where everybody's taking care of the other creatures. But I can't switch planets right now. Maybe I will be able to have that choice, you know, if there's future life. Guru Krishna Loka. Loka just means planet in Sanskrit and in Pali. Krishna's planet is really pretty. There's all these cows with jewels and they're running around. And everybody looks really pretty. And in Buddhist cosmology, that says, you know what, even Krishna's planet has the three characteristics. So this leg of the tripod to say, I understand how it is, and I'm going to invite a way of being in the world where I can reflect what it is like to not demand. And that's different from, you know, I hurt my thumb with a hammer. Oh, I'm just going to see. No, you go and help your thumb, you know. If you get a thorn, you take it out. It's responding, you know. It's not being passive. Like, I've gone to therapy. I've gone to, you know, when I switched schools and it was so stressful, I had to go to this healer to help me out. And that's not some idealistic thing of like, I'm going to feel contentment with my anxiety. No, if you're sick, you feel medicine. It's responding to the world. It's so different than this this conflict that I can have with life. And of course, the treatment, the recipe for life is this Noble Eightfold Path. And Buddhism is all about organizing in the scriptures, right? You have the three aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path. And, you know, with right view and right intention, right speech gets there. And you have meditation again. And I remember the moment when I was reading the scripture where I said to myself, is a lifetime long enough to really study this Noble Eightfold Path and these truths? Because I had graduated from college and I really had this idea that spiritual practice was like, you could get a diploma, you know. Actually, some people give diplomas for stream enterer and so on. Yeah, so just going back to the basics has been very helpful for me because we can hear about spiritual pirouettes, you know, spiritual sophistication. People can do this and people can do that. And at the end of the day, when you wake up and we move in this world, I want to pose this question for you. If you are in this tripod, right, where you have your conduct, your virtue, your integrity, and then you have wisdom and you have meditation and mindfulness, just kind of share with each other what your journey has been with those three things. You know, are you finding that there's been more emphasis in one or the other? Are there things that always trip you, you know? Are there questions that you have? And if there's something that comes up, I'm happy to also give any reflections if that's appropriate. So let's just do 5 minutes. Let's just do 5 minutes to check in with somebody. Say your name, what brought you in, and then do a little tripod check-in. Sila Samari Panya. How is it interacting in your life? Is that clear? Does everybody know what I'm asking you to talk about for 5 minutes? Maybe groups of three or pairs. Sorry to stop your talking, but that means that you're engaging with each other, which is beautiful. I am wondering if there is a comment that anyone would like to share, maybe something you heard in the group, or a question to me. I don't know if it would be easier to ask Gabe, or you come closer and ask a question, and it's okay. I can just talk and talk. But if there are any questions or comments, I would like to open up the room for them. Thank you for asking the question. And I know it's awkward to have to get up. And so, yay. There is a monk, Ajahn Lee, I think, in Thailand. And I've talked about this before, Common Ground, where they talk about people who don't practice. And again, going back to cosmology with colorful language, that if you're not practicing, your demons don't come. And as soon as you start practicing, the demons come. And they say, it's kind of like when you owe money to your neighbor, and then the neighbor knows that you have absolutely no money, they don't knock on your door. But if they know that you won the lottery, or that, all of a sudden you have some money, then they will come. And I think with the mind can be like that, where if someone is just living with distractions, all they're doing is distracting the mind, and all of a sudden you stop, the mind will not just all of a sudden bliss out. So to answer your question without my life, is seeing this connection of my daily life to the cushion. A lot of people that begin meditation and stop can be because they got promised relaxation, or they got promised something, and then they didn't get it after 2 years. I'm like, well, why should I do this? There are many things where meditation is not seen as something that will give me this gift. For example, devotion. You know, I notice in the theistic religion where you have an outward focus and you're praying to Kali or to Allah, and it's not about you. And the mind can really quiet down. And this practice is around the day where you can do something where you bring mindfulness. It will help you in the cushion. Also, throughout my life, I've used beads. So my meditation beads can be a really good anchor. So do walking meditation and then do 108 lengths. Or I sit and I do 108 breaths. Or I think of 108 names throughout my life that I can send metta. So when the mind is having challenging emotions, and at that moment, you don't want to give attention to the challenging emotion and you need an anchor, things like chanting and beads and bowing, you know, child's pose and bowing to the ground, you know, the way Muslims do, is really good for your parasympathetic system. And because we live in a materialistic society, the message is there that meditation will calm you down and I don't know how many times I've seen it in the last 5 years where, oh, you want to be healthy? Eat right, exercise, floss, meditate. They throw in meditate. And there are so many apps. And yes, you know, you can listen to your little talk and all that, but meditation is so much more than a relaxation exercise or when a challenging emotion comes in to then invite wisdom. Is this a message where what I need is psychotherapy? Is what's bringing up with me something that I need journaling? And I've done that, you know, like right now I'm journaling in the morning. And as I look at my journaling life, I haven't journaled every single year of my life. But to process those emotions only in the cushion would be a mistake because I have so many thoughts that when I write in the morning, that's where those, some of those thoughts stay there. So by the time I get to the cushion, they've already been processed a little bit. Then I do my bridge, you know, which is a little bit of bowing, a little bit of yoga. So to answer the question is find your bridge. Is there something that you can do? You know, we don't have a society that does chanting or humming or dancing. And, you know, at the monastery, we would chant for 20 minutes before we went into silence. And I would be so bored sometimes, you know, again, I was like 26 when I was in England. And with whatever's happening, and also know that those things that are coming up, that's what requires attention. And the difference between suppressing, I don't want those thoughts, you know? And maybe you're the type that will never relax in meditation. And is that okay? Pema Chodron talks about that, and she says, oh, I'm not a skilled meditator, world-famous Buddhist teacher, best-selling author. Says, I guide meditation, but my mind doesn't quiet naturally. And there are four types of practitioners. The ones who progressed rapidly and easily, and the ones who progress rapidly but difficult and difficult. And then slowly and easy and slowly and difficult. And depending on the year, the day, you might be into one of those four. And having this cantico bhavana, what does it mean to have patient endurance? That's enough. We live in a society where patience is not celebrated. America adores convenience. And so why should a meditation be convenient? You know, you have to go against the habitual mind and against the cultural norm. And that's not easy. So what you have asked is an excellent, excellent question. I don't know if I responded to something that is useful, but that's what came up to mind. It's always an honor for me to talk in the Common Ground community. Thank you for being here. It'd be even weirder for me to talk to an empty wall. So it's nice to see human beings. And I wish you a great evening. So, have a good evening. Good night, everybody. And may you be well, happy, and safe. And may your loved ones be happy and safe. And this is something I say to my groups in meditation. Every time that you work towards your happiness, you are honoring everybody who loves you. Everybody who has ever loved you, what they want is for you to be happy. So when you work towards your happiness, you're honoring your ancestors, you're honoring the people that have loved you, and you're giving hope to the young ones. So with that, I leave you. Bye-bye.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org. www.commongrounddonate.